by reports that Russian troops have moved beyond the zone of conflict, attacked the Georgian town of Goree, and are threatening the Georgia's capital of Tbilisi.
Well, at least he got the Tbilisi part right,
pronounced it right.
Isn't this a mess? Is this one hell of a mess? In doing a little bit of research, well, more than a little bit of research over the weekend, I've come to realize that practically everything we are hearing in the soundbite news that constitutes information in this country, almost all of it is pretty much the inverse of what has really happened between Russia and Georgia. And if not the inverse, the salient facts are being left out as to why Russia pounced the way it did on these two provinces, or independent or autonomous region, whatever you want to call them. I'm going to call them provinces just for to make it easier for me, and have continued their move into Georgian territory. Not that these two provinces are not claimed by Georgia, but anyway, most of the information I have found that is coming across to us in this country through American media is either abbreviated to the point of rendering it almost meaningless or is simply not true. So simply not true. I'm not stating that as though that statement is true. I mean, simply not true from the perspective of pretty much the rest of the world, or at least the part of the world that's directly, well, you know what I mean. I guess it would be just as ridiculous for me to say it's totally untrue. Most of what I am finding out, though, contradicts. How's that? Contradicts everything that we are hearing from mainstream American media. Something interesting, though, it did not catch my eye at the time, and that may be because I just very seldom read the Atlanta newspaper any longer, even though I still subscribe to it. There's not much reason to, but a listener emailed this to me. It's from July 14th from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Here's what it says. A large contingent of Georgia, this Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia, Army National Guard soldiers flew to the Republic of Georgia on Sunday for joint military exercises at a time when tension is brewing in the region. The soldiers, mostly from the metro area, will be part of something called Immediate Response 2008. Which will amount to the largest U.S. footprint on the crossroads of Asia and Europe since the Cold War began. That's when, 1946. The operation also provides practical training. Now, this is a part I don't quite get. Listen to this. The operation provides practical training for the 48th Infantry Brigade's 1st Battalion, 121st Infantry Regiment, just months before a pending deployment to Afghanistan. Okay, so practical training is the reason the Pentagon has said back on July 14th, these soldiers from the Army National Guard were going to the Republic of Georgia for joint military exercises. Practical training before being deployed to Afghanistan. However, further into the article it says the Georgia Infantry Battalion just returned from a 12-month tour of Iraq in April of 2006 and is scheduled to leave for Afghanistan next summer for deployment with the 48th Brigade to train the Afghan National Army. So if the Georgia Infantry Brigade that was sent on July 14th to the Republic of Georgia, if it is being sent there for training for what? It's combat. It's already been in combat for 12 months. Why is it going to Georgia for training? Well, to me, the quick answer is it's not going to Georgia for training. That's a bat squeeze. That's the cover story, and somehow the author of this article screwed up and put in a fact that I'm sure the Pentagon probably did not want to go in there. I'm not that they're trying to hide anything, but why shove the reader's face in the fact that this is a combat-tested infantry brigade, the 1st Battalion of that brigade, that is being sent to Georgia for training. Anyway, the 325 soldiers are from Winder, Covington, Lawrenceville, Gainesville, and Milledgeville, which is all relatively close to, with the exception of Milledgeville, relatively close to Atlanta. Otherwise, would have headed to Fort Stewart or another U.S. military base for annual training. Okay, for annual training, a combat unit that has just spent 12 months in Iraq has to come back for annual training. No, they're being sent to Georgia, the Republic of Georgia, for training. Okay, well, whatever. The article goes on to say, in this this operation called Immediate Response 2008, they, our soldiers, will conduct tactical and procedural training alongside Georgian soldiers. Oh, they're going to train the Republic of Georgia soldiers. Is that what this means? It says everything from exhausting road marches to combat lifesaver medical classes to marksmanship and hand-to-hand combat. They will also participate in mock war situations. Okay, now, which is it, gentle reader? Is it our people who have just returned from the combat zone need training? And therefore, let's send them to the Republic of Georgia for training before they're deployed to Afghanistan. Oh, but wait. Or is it because our soldiers are being sent to the Republic of Georgia a month ago to train the Georgian soldiers in how to handle exhausting road marches, combat medical classes, marksmanship, and hand-to-hand combat? No, I have no idea. But these, you know, this kind of stuff dribbles out every once it does. I'm sure it's all innocent. It's all up and up. It's all all above board. There's no here. The listener who sent this to me was just overreacting. I'm overreacting. There's nothing here. Move on. What about John Edwards today? How's his confession going? Huh? Jesus. But there you have it. A month ago. Now, this situation between Georgia and Russia is nothing that started a month ago. This has been brewing for what now? 4 or 5 years? And the U.S. has been probing and pushing and provoking this former KGB nutcase who now who has been running Russia. This is a very risky situation. Now, Bush today demanded that Russia end, his words, a dramatic and brutal escalation of violence in the Republic of Georgia, that it also agree to immediate ceasefire, and that it also accept international mediation to end the conflict. He went on to say that the Russians have to abandon any attempt to topple Georgia's government. He went on to say, Russia has invaded a sovereign neighboring state and threatens a democratic government elected by its people. Such an action is unacceptable in the 21st century. Is anybody taking George W. Bush the least bit serious? He went on to say that Russia's escalation of the conflict had, quote, raised serious questions about its intentions in Georgia and the region. He went on to say that Russia's action had, quote, substantially damaged Russia's standing in the world. He went on to say it's time for Russia to be true to its word and act to end this crisis. End quote. What the hell? Do you ever get the feeling? This is what I meant in my little mini blog, non-existent blog today about, you know, let's get together tonight and laugh. I mean, what are you going to do? Bush? Bush has moral authority or political authority or any authority at all? When the rest of the world, not just the rest of the world's governments, but pretty much the rest of the world's people, demanded that he, George Bush, not invade a sovereign nation and commit further death and destruction for no reason. And now Bush is lecturing the Russians, who have valid reason in the great geopolitical scheme of things, to do what they've done. Oh, my God.
Eastern world. It is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to
redefining kill. Anger but management. It's Mike Malloy, only on Nova M Radio.
And even the Jordan River. 21 past the hour. We spent a little time this weekend, we being Kathy and me, trying to explain to each other by doing some research what the hell was going on between Russia and Georgia, because it is not something that's gotten an awful lot of attention. It is a multi-layered situation that involves territorial disputes that go back centuries, as so much in that part of the world does. It also involves pipelines. Oh, there's a surprise for both oil and natural gas. There's another surprise. It also involves the Caspian Sea area. Oil reserves. Oh, imagine that. It also involves the insanity of two of the world's most dangerous leaders, Vladimir Putin and George W. Bush. It also involves ethnic Russians and ethnic Georgians and people this and people that. Any attempt by ABC or CBS or NBC or anyone to give you a 2-minute soundbite definition of the situation or description of the problem or who's the good guy, who's the bad guy is going to fall so far short of the information necessary to make a decision about this as to render it meaningless. But old George W. Bush, the tough talking Texan from Kennebunkport, was out there today issuing a throwdown to Pooty Poot from the Rose Garden. So what do you think, Truth Seekers? Is Chuckle Nuts about to enter a third war? Not against Russia.
I am deeply concerned by reports that Russian troops have moved beyond the zone of conflict, attacked the Georgian town of Goree, and are threatening the Georgia's capital of Tbilisi. There's evidence that Russian forces may soon begin bombing the civilian airport in the capital city.
It started.
These reports are accurate. These Russian actions would represent a dramatic and brutal escalation of the conflict in Georgia.
Oh.
These actions would be inconsistent with assurances we have received from Russia that its objectives were limited to restoring the status quo in South Ossetia that existed before fighting began on August the 6th. It now appears that an effort may be underway to depose Russia's duly elected government.
No, not Russia's.
Russia has invaded a sovereign
God.
Neighboring state and threatens a democratic government elected by its people. Such an action is unacceptable in the 21st century.
Oh, really? A democratic elected by its people? You don't threaten that. What about Hamas? Oh, never mind. That's right. Those are a bunch of damn Palestinians. So he says, even as he reads, whoever wrote this for him, it now appears that an effort may be underway to depose Russia's duly elected government. Don't you mean Georgia's? Never mind. It doesn't make any difference. No commentator is going to point out that this dumbass doesn't know what he just said. But anyway, so Putin is pushing into Georgia. What can Bush do about it? Is there any force behind his words or just hypocritical weasel words? What's going on here? Does anybody think Putin or Mensa Man care a whit about what the rest of the world thinks about their military actions? Mad men never do.
Russia's government must respect Georgia's territorial integrity and sovereignty. The Russian government must reverse the course it appears to be on.
Or what?
And accept this peace agreement as a first step toward resolving this conflict.
Or what?
Russia's actions this week have raised serious questions about its intentions in Georgia and the region. These actions have substantially damaged Russia's standing in the world.
Oh, you're one to talk.
And these actions jeopardize Russia's relations with the United States and Europe. It is time for Russia to be true to its word and to act to end this crisis.
Oh, he's getting all serious. You notice how he's very carefully enunciating, even when he gets the countries wrong, it doesn't make any difference. Very carefully, because this is why George Bush is a leader, in order to handle situations like this, a situation that he, obviously, and his neocon government have their fingerprints all over. Huh? So the demands, and that's what they are, demands that Russia do this, Russia do that, You notice is not being backed up with it. What are you going to do? What are you going to do, Chucklenuts? Freeze Russia's assets being held in U.S. banks? Oh, that'll work. What are you going to do? Are you going to invade? Are you going to send troops? Are you going to? I know you're going to fly surveillance flights. What are you going to do? You have already, Mr. Bush, with the push from your neocon right-wing Nazis, you have provoked the Russian bear over and over and over again. Your radar stations along the Russian border, your insistence that former Warsaw Pact nations now become part of NATO. What the hell is NATO doing, even still being alive? The North Atlantic Treaty Organization? Oh, that's right. It's fighting in Afghanistan. My bad. Trying to build a barbed wire fence around Russia. Yeah. They're going to stand for it. This would be like the Russians opening up radar stations along the coast or along the border between Texas and Mexico, wouldn't it? Huh? This would be like, oh, well. Stay with us. We'll have more on this when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
They sentenced me to 20 years of boredom for trying to change the system from where they are. I'm coming now. I'm coming to reward them. First, we take Manhattan.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you on Nova M Radio.
It's about 25 before the hour. Now, Insane McCain talking about Russia and the crisis between that country and Georgia today. He was in Pennsylvania this morning and he was reading his statement. He reads practically everything. I don't know about you, but when somebody is speaking contemporaneously and or extemporaneously, whatever, and addressing a live audience and keeps referring to notes, you're looking over at the speech on the podium, it is very distracting until finally, at least with me, I just lose interest. I figure, okay, look, what you're saying involves you're trying to convince me of something, either to vote for you or to sign up or make a donation or to accept Jesus as my personal savior or to, you know, whatever pitch you're making. If you don't believe in it strongly enough to have it committed to your memory, I'm not interested. You know, don't have it all written down and keep looking over here. No, oh, where was I? Yes, I was talking about now over here. Yeah, well, he was doing that today, and he got some camera time immediately. You know, he wants to prove his bona fides that, you know, yes, I have, my friends, lots of foreign policy experience. Why, I even know where Georgia is, and it's not on the border with Alabama and South Carolina. Ha, ha, ha. That's a joke from the South, you know, my friends. But anyway, yes, I know where it is, and you know, I've been there, and that makes me an expert on that problem over there. Anyway, he says he has met Georgian President Mikhail Saakashvili many times, including during several trips to Georgia. But if you listen here to this 37-second soundbite, which he read, he repeatedly mispronounces the Georgian leader's name. Now, this is somebody he's met many times. His name is Mikhail Saakashvili.
Following fraudulent parliamentary elections in 2003, a peaceful democratic revolution took place.
Yawn.
Led by the U.S. educated lawyer Mikhail Saakashvili, the Rose Revolution changed things dramatically, and following his election, President Saakashvili embarked on a series of wide-ranging and successful reforms.
Yawn.
I've met with President Shashkavili many times, including several trips to Georgia.
When we went to see the Atlanta Braves play. Oh, wait, is that a different Georgia? Oh, I don't know. Doesn't he sound just so, I mean, so leaderly? You know, this is leaderly stuff coming out of his mouth. John McCain, if nothing else, is very leaderly. He's got some leaderly things about him. He's, you know, he knows all about the U.S. educated lawyer, Mikhail Sasvathasmaki, blah, something. You want him as your president, huh, Malloy? No, I don't want him as the president. I have said, oh, Jesus. I'm still getting emails about last week when I said, why not just turn this whole stinking mess over to the Republicans? And, of course, the caveat was we go back to constitutional government in this country, A, B, that we have a veto-proof majority in the House and the Senate. A lot of the people who wrote me vicious, virulent, attacking emails, I know it's been building up for a while, hasn't it? And that gave you a great opportunity, especially the Clinton supporters, but most especially the Obama supporters. Woo! You talk about a tidal wave of fire. But you all conveniently left that part out. You see, in my little hypothetical parallel universe of letting McCain have the presidency, there was a very serious caveat that you all conveniently ignored, and that was veto-proof majorities in the House and the Senate, and a return to constitutional government, which would eliminate signing statements. There's nothing in the Constitution about signing statements. That's hog snot. There's nothing in the Constitution about War Powers Act. That's more hog snot. But you all left that out. It was much more fun to try to kick Mike's ass. Well, it didn't work. I still maintain that given the condition that everything is in, if we can have a veto-proof House and Senate in the hands of Democrats, then give the presidency to McCain. And I still maintain that. But you can stop already with the emails, because now when they come in, any more about that topic, I'm just deleting them. You know, enough is enough already. Jesus. According to Kommersant.com, which is an online Russian, English language website, I know that's redundant, I don't care, U.S. military instructors were training mercenaries in the state of Georgia, or in the country of Georgia, Republic of Georgia. I remember last week when this story started to break on Friday. Was it Friday, Thursday, or Friday? We mentioned the fact that the reports, initial reports I had from websites not based in the United States, Debkafile.com is one, which is based in Israel, run by a former Mossad agent and his daughter, who was in the Israeli military. Plus in Haaretz newspaper that there were maybe 150 Israeli combat soldiers in Georgia training, and that there were U.S. military personnel. Turns out there's about 300, as far as we can find out, about 300 U.S. military personnel who were training Georgians in that country. Now, think for a moment, 300 U.S. Soviet, or I'm sorry, 300 Soviet military trainers training the Mexican army? Doesn't even have to be that close, I guess, although, you know, Georgia vis-a-vis Russia is Mexico vis-a-vis the U.S., but 300 Russian soldiers training Mexican military on tactics that would indicate the possibility of an invasion. How long do you think the U.S. would just sit there and be quiet about that? Probably not very long. But anyway, according to Kommersant.com, thousands of mercenaries are fighting for Georgia in the conflict that started out with South Ossetia and now is with Russia. According to RIA Novosti, which is a Russian news service, they are commanded by the U.S. by U.S. military instructors. It goes on to say from 2,500 to 3,000 mercenaries are fighting against Russia's, and they call them peacekeepers, yeah, like our peacekeepers in Afghanistan, on behalf of Georgia. The U.S. military instructors directly command and coordinate actions of mercenaries without being involved in actual fighting, the source specified. According to intelligence data, there are roughly 1,000 military instructors of the United States in the Republic of Georgia, training up to 3,000 mercenaries. Now, it goes on to say Russian soldiers have annihilated, their word, a few groups of mercenaries. Some of the mercenaries have been captured, and investigators are, I love this, working with them. But then there's more. This is from Russia Today. Yesterday, bodies on the streets of South Ossetian capital. That's the headline. Did mercenaries help Georgia? The president of South Ossetia claims mercenaries took part in Georgia's offensive against the breakaway republic, according to Russia's RIA news agency. Edward Koiti says South Ossetian officials say more than 2,000 of their civilians were killed in the attack. Georgia disputes this figure. Now, let me clarify that. South Ossetian officials say that more than 2,000 of their civilians were killed in the attack by the Georgian military, not the Russian. These are Russians in South Ossetia. You understand that. They are ethnic Russians. The report goes on. The Russian envoy in South Ossetia, Dmitry Medoyev, said the town looks like Stalingrad during World War II, with fallen trees, power lines, burnt Georgian tanks all over the streets. The dead bodies of Georgian soldiers are lying everywhere, Medoyev said. He also confirmed dead Ukrainians. And then this, two unidentified bodies found today are said to have black skin. Possibly they are Americans, but we can't say for sure yet. We will be able to publish ... and then it runs out there. But there is a sub part to this about Bush's fingerprints all over this. So the simplistic attitude of American media, their job is to keep us dumb, to keep us focused on the bigger picture, which is U.S. hegemony and U.S. aggression and U.S. imperialism, only not in those terms. It's U.S. trying to help countries like Iraq establish democratic government, and Afghanistan and Georgia and all these stands, up to and including Kazakhstan, Berserkistan, all of these stands where we must establish our presence and our authority because of the oil.
I looked a man in the eye. I was able to get a sense of his soul.
Yeah, how's that coming, George? That soul sense thing that you had with Putin. Is that working out okay? I think it is. I think the two of you are blood brothers, if you know what I mean. Now, the... Vitaly Churkin, who is the Russian ambassador to the United Nations. By the way, for the most part, the Russians did what the UN Charter talks about. When member states are attacked, take it to the UN. Since Ossetia is one of these two disputed provinces, 80% of the population, I believe, are ethnic Russians and speak Russian. And when the Georgians attacked, with the promise of assistance by the United States and the backing of U.S. and military I'm sorry, U.S. and Israeli weaponry and trainers. The response by the Russians at first was to go to the U.N. Security Council with the complaint. And, of course, as Condoleezza Rice did when the Lebanese complained about the Israeli invasion of a year ago, as Condoleezza Rice did then, well, we're not going to, we're going to defer. Let's wait. Let's wait a few minutes. No, let's wait a few days. No, wait a minute. Until the slaughter had gotten to a point beyond which would have been open war. Well, we've done it again. We've done it again. The Russian ambassador blamed the outbreak of violence on Georgia. Here's what he said. What is taking place now is not unexpected. The Russian Federation, as you recall, on many occasions drew attention to the dangerous situation which was evolving around South Ossetia. The Russian Federation on many occasions drew attention to the fact that Georgia was increasing, at an increasing rate, its offensive weapons. Georgia is the world record holder in the increase of its military budget, which over recent years has grown by 30 times, and now we understand what the purpose of all this was, end quote. Now, again, more background that we talked about, I think, Friday. The Republic of Georgia is all of a sudden is the darling of the United States, and we have been pushing for Georgia to join NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, whose sole purpose was to stop a Russian land invasion or a Soviet land invasion across the Fuda Gap, whatever the hell it's called. Don't send it to me. Don't email me. Across Germany. That's what the whole thing was about. And now NATO was used in the bombing attack against Serbia, which was, according to the NATO charter, illegal. And now it's being used in Afghanistan, which, according to the NATO charter, is illegal. But it doesn't matter anymore. Now, to add insult to injury, the as per an agreement, apparently, that we have had with the Georgians, because, like I said, this problem did not evolve over the past weekend. The U.S. military provided transport, air transport, of 2,000, I think the entire Georgian contingent of military personnel in Iraq, back to Georgia to fight the Russians. How is this seen by the Russians? Well, it's seen as assistance to bring troops in to fight Russian soldiers. And the troop ferrying is being done by U.S. military transport. Hello? Now, according to several Israeli sources, not just Debka File, but also Haaretz and Ma'ariv newspapers, news agencies, both the U.S. and Israel have helped arm Georgia's military. This is according to Haaretz. Is this Haaretz? The United States is sending fresh supplies of weapons to Georgia from its base in the Jordanian port of Aqaba. That's according to the Israeli newspaper Ma'ariv. The paper says U.S. began flying weapons on Saturday. According to Ma'ariv, the U.S. is hiring Russian-made freight planes belonging to UTI Worldwide Incorporated to transport arms and ammunition to Georgia. UTI Incorporated is an Israeli company. The paper says the Pentagon is redirecting supplies to Tbilisi that were earmarked for Iraq. And what else? God. It's really getting twisted. George writes, it breaks down like this. One, the two breakaway provinces in Georgia broke away from the new Georgian government because they were just a puppet regime for the West. Two, Russia proper was defending these small breakaway provinces because they knew that they would be wiped out by the puppet regime for noncompliance with the Western-controlled Georgian government. Three, the Georgian military started this whole conflict by shelling a Russian peacekeeper outpost and killing 10 soldiers. They are armed with advanced military armament provided by the U.S. and Israel. Four, if you pretend the Ossetians are Palestinians and the Georgians are the IDF, you can better visualize what exactly is going on. And then last, when the Western mass media says that Russia is starting or started the aggression, they are lying. Now, I'm certainly not making any case for Putin's military. I think Putin is as much of a hegemonist, or he wants to reinvigorate the Soviet Empire, much to the same degree that I think George Bush and the right-wing neocons in this country would like to reinvigorate a dying American empire. Russia, what are they down to now? 140 million people? Is it that low? But they're awash in money. They are the second largest nuclear power in terms of nuclear warheads and deliverable nuclear warheads on Earth, after us, of course. And we all of a sudden we're involved here in a game of chicken. Is that what this is with Russia? Meanwhile, Pakistan is talking about impeaching Musharraf, throwing his ass out. Don't forget how he came to power. It was a military coup. And what happens to the nuclear weapons in Pakistan after they nuke India? What happens to those weapons, right? I just want to go home. I just want to go home. But I guess that doesn't matter, does it? Huh? All right, let's do some phone calls when we come back. We have some more to drop into the mix here, but if you'd like to join in, and I would like to stay on topic this next hour. Don't call me up and tell me about chemtrails. The number is 800-989-1480. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. We are discussing here on the Malloy program on the Nova M Radio Network the escalating and terrific, in the sense of terror-ific, situation in the Republic of Georgia and Russia. This is from tomorrow's Washington Post. And it was also in the Sydney Morning Herald, the Australian paper. The Washington Post titles it A Path to Peace in the Caucasus. The Sydney Morning Herald titled it Gorbachev Slams U.S.'s, quote, serious blunder, end quote. Difference in, thanks to Barb who sent this to me. This is what Gorbachev has written. The past week's event in South Ossetia are bound to shock and pain anyone. Already thousands of people have died, tens of thousands have been turned into refugees, and towns and villages lie in ruins. Nothing can justify this loss of life and destruction. It is a warning to all. The roots of this tragedy lie in the decision of Georgia's separatist leaders in 1991 to abolish South Ossetian autonomy. This turned out to be a time bomb for Georgia's territorial integrity. Each time successive Georgian leaders tried to impose their will by force, both in South Ossetia and in Abkhazia, where the issues of autonomy are similar, it only made the situation worse. New wounds aggravated old injuries. Nevertheless, Gorbachev writes, it was still possible to find a political solution. For some time, relative calm was maintained in South Ossetia. The peacekeeping force composed of Russians, Georgians, and Ossetians fulfilled its mission, and ordinary Ossetians and Georgians who live close to each other found at least some common ground. Through all these years, Russia has continued to recognize Georgia's territorial integrity. Clearly, the only way to solve the South Ossetian problem on that basis is through peaceful means. Indeed, in a civilized world, there is no other way. The Georgian leadership flouted this key principle. What happened on the night of August 7th is beyond comprehension. The Georgian military, according to Gorbachev, attacked the South Ossetian capital of Tsikhinvali with multiple rocket launchers designed to devastate large areas. Russia had to respond. To accuse it of aggression against small, defenseless Georgia, quote, quote, is not just hypocritical, but shows a lack of humanity. Mounting a military assault against innocents was a reckless decision whose tragic consequences for thousands of people of different nationalities are now clear. The Georgian leadership could do this only with the perceived support and encouragement of a much more powerful force. Georgian armed forces were trained by hundreds of U.S. instructors, and its sophisticated military equipment was bought in a number of countries. This, coupled with the promise of NATO membership, emboldened Georgia leaders into thinking that they could get away with a so-called blitzkrieg in South Ossetia. In other words, Georgian President Mikhail Saakashvili was expecting unconditional support from the West, and the West had given him reason to think he would have it. Now that the Georgian military assault has been routed, both the Georgian government and its supporters should rethink their position. Hostilities must cease as soon as possible, Gorbachev continues, and urgent steps must be taken to help the victims. The humanitarian catastrophe, regretfully, received very little coverage in Western media this weekend. So, help the victims, rebuild the devastated towns and villages. It is equally important to start thinking about ways to solve the underlying problem, which is among the most painful and challenging issues in the Caucasus, a region that should be approached with the greatest care. When the problems of South Ossetia and Abkhazia first flared up, I proposed that they be settled through a federation that would grant broad autonomy to the two republics. The idea was dismissed, particularly by the Georgians. Attitudes gradually shifted, but after last week, it would be much more difficult to strike a deal even on such a basis. Old grievances are a heavy burden. Healing is a long process. It requires patience and dialogue. Small nations of the Caucasus do have a history of living together. It has been demonstrated that a lasting peace is possible, that tolerance and cooperation can create conditions for normal life and development. Nothing is more important than that. Over the past few days, some Western nations have taken positions, particularly in the UN Security Council, that have been far from balanced. As a result, the Security Council was not able to act effectively from the very start of this conflict. By declaring the Caucasus, a region that is thousands of miles from the American continent, a sphere of its, quote, national interest, end quote, the United States made a serious blunder. Of course, peace in the Caucasus is in everyone's interest, but it is simply common sense to recognize that Russia is rooted there by common geography and centuries of history. Russia is not seeking territorial expansion. It has legitimate interests in this region. The international community's long-term aim could be to create a sub-regional system of security and cooperation that would make any provocation and the very possibility of crises such as this one impossible. A lesson from recent events, Gorbachev concludes, is that geopolitical games are dangerous anywhere, not just in the Caucasus. Yeah, America's blunder. United States made a serious blunder. Yeah, the reason the Caspian Sea area or the Black Sea or the Caucasus or the Stans area is declared a vital interest to the United States is because of what? The goat herders there? The poppy growers? Possibly, but The terrain, the beautiful, craggy, desolate mountains? No. What is it that makes it an area of vital U.S. interest? Yeah, the same thing that made Iraq an area of vital U.S. interest. The games that are being played, the very dangerous games that are being played by the neocons in the Bush crime family, are taking us right to the brink in so many issues. But in this particular situation, what is the U.S. going to do? The quick answer, nothing. We have no problem busting up or assisting in the bust up of the Lebanese or Hamas or the Palestinians or defenseless Iraqis. We have no problem. As a matter of fact, we'll even threaten the 30 or 40 million Iranians. But when it comes to Russia? George Bush or John McCain or Barack Obama, I don't care who it is, there is any American politician or so-called leader, he's going to stand there and say, this will not stand. Now, the Russians, you have to get back, even though the Russians, in my opinion, from reading all I could get my hands on, the Russians didn't provoke this. No, I don't like Putin, and I'm not making a case for Russia, but the Russians didn't provoke this. Again, imagine how it would be in this country if the Russians decided to build a missile defense system, radar system, on our southern border and tell the American government, well, this is because Brazil is going to be the next big nuclear power. And if Brazil decides to launch an attack against Russia, our motherland, this will give us early warning so we can respond, ah, for Christ's sake. But that's the story, you see, that the Americans, ever since Bush seized power in this country, that's what we have been telling the Russians. Oh, don't worry about it. No. This is in case Iran decides to launch nuclear weapons against us or Israel. This is our way, or Western Europe, not just us or Israel. You know, we'll throw Western Europe into this, too. And Putin is sitting there thinking to himself, you rat bastards. This went on for 60 years. And you want me to think that? Oh, please.
Mama Russia. Mama Russia.
Plenty capable of conducting foreign policy for the United States in a way that reflects positively on my nation.
Yeah, how's that coming? Huh? Oh, my God. All right, to your phone calls. Again, the number here is 800-989-1480. Starting with Joe, listening in Miami on WINZ. Joe, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how are you doing today?
I'm all right. How are you?
You know, Mike, the Chinese and Russians aren't stupid. Remember, the Chinese premier came here a year and a half ago to look Bush in the face. He didn't come here for a chicken dinner. Bush has been warned. Later on, Putin brought him to Vienna. He warned him again. And I think this is just a result that Putin knew this was coming. They were planning for it. And he's going to finish his job in Georgia. He's going to take care of the CIA operatives we put in charge.
Well, let me ask you this: who do you think? Which one of these leaders, the president of Georgia, or Putin?
The president of Georgia is taking orders from the U.S. He's probably been trained in the U.S. under CIA operations, you know. And like I said, Putin understands what the game. They knew what was going to happen, and Bush was warned probably a year ago not to try some of these clown acts he's doing. Right now, probably Soviet nuclear forces are on high alert, and like I said, I heard today that we're moving carriers back into the Persian Gulf again, and they're not going to play around with the carriers. If things start, they'll use a 10 megaton bomb on those carriers, wipe them out at one time.
Do you think that maybe some kind of a deal is made here? Because the pictures of Putin and Bush at the Olympics after this invasion occurred or this conflict developed, the pictures don't appear to be two world leaders who are very, very, very upset about what has happened. So here's my question to you. Do you suppose that maybe a deal has been cut?
No, I don't think it's...
No, wait. Let me finish. Do you suppose the deal has been cut, and the deal would be this? The U.S. says to Putin, you go ahead and invade Georgia, do what you want. We are going to invade Iran. You know, we'll give a bunch of BS lip service about your invasion, and that's all we want from you.
What I'm concerned about is moving the carriers back in. These clients may actually be ready to defend Georgia with some aircraft strikes, which is going to be mindless craziness.
Well, yeah, we're...
Mike, remember I told you about 2 years ago, I think we're going to get hit from five different directions when the end comes. Five countries are going to attack us at once, nuclear type.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, Joe. I don't think that's going to happen, but I think the rest of the world is pretty much getting tired of being pawns in this global game of chicken between these so-called world powers. I think the rest of the world, I don't know what the rest of the world so-called could do, but I think they're getting a little bit fed up with it. Ian is calling from Hope, Arkansas, listening on Sirius. Hey, Ian. Hope, Arkansas.
Hi. Yeah. I just moved there at the beginning of the year.
Oh, okay.
I drive a truck for a living, right? Believe it or not, right now I'm in Oklahoma City.
Uh-huh.
A little bit of geography. I just was looking, because I was at the house yesterday, I was looking at Georgia. Georgia is basically a valley that runs west, northwest, east, southeast. If you can kind of think of Tbilisi and Gori as more or less the center of the
right.
the country.
Mm-hmm.
And then South Ossetia, the province of South Ossetia, is a line of mountains on the north side of that valley.
Mm-hmm.
I can well understand why the Georgians would want to exert a little more control there. It's basically kind of the high ground over most of their country. That's kind of, in a way, it kind of looks like the Sudetenland in Czechoslovakia, if you can think back on history, and that's kind of what it looked like to me. One other comment. When I was looking at the maps on the internet, when I pulled up Georgia on Google Maps, for some reason their satellite imagery is not available. There's only the road maps. I had to go to a couple other places to find the overhead maps. It's kind of an odd commentary on things. I don't know if they took it down for a reason or if there's other things that were happening there. One other thing in the general category that I would have to ask: what are Georgia's neighbors saying about this? Specifically, I would say right off Armenia. The next one would be Azerbaijan, and then the largest of the neighbors outside of Russia would be Turkey, which is directly on Georgia's south border. What has Turkey had to say about this affair?
Well, I haven't read of any reaction by the neighbors, as you point out, Ian. I would imagine that, just a guess here, but I would imagine they're very upset. As far as the topographical similarity between the Sudetenland and South Ossetia, I understand where you were going with that. Hitler said the Germans need to come back into the fold, and the Russians said the Russians did, but I think there's a little bit more involved here. I don't think the government of Czechoslovakia invaded Germany, if you know what I'm saying.
Gently into that good night. Rage against the flying monkey, right? with Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour, according to the Guardian of the UK, someone just sent this to me. Here's a quote from an article in the Guardian from Putin. The Guardian says, Mr. Putin has verbally attacked the United States for their support of Georgian President Mikhail Saakashvili, who he, Putin, has compared to former Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein. Mr. Putin said, quote, the Americans, of course, had to hang Saddam Hussein for destroying several Shiite villages, but the current Georgian rulers, who in 1 hour wiped 10 Ossetian villages from the face of the earth, the Georgian rulers, which used tanks to run over children and the elderly, which threw civilians into cellars and burnt them, they are players that have to be protected. There is no reason, and I hope you all, regardless of what your position is on what is occurring in the Caucasus, really. I mean, we've got enough on our own plates, right? Although this definitely has the hands, the fingerprints of the Bush crime family all over it. But regardless of your bottom line feeling here, I think it's important to understand that American media will not tell us the truth. The story we are getting is the story that is politically in tune with what the Bush crime family wants us to believe. You do agree with that, I hope. You know, for the most part, especially television. There obviously are some print outlets that may be attempting to present an unbiased point of view, excuse me, of this conflict. But we are not going to get from any television source whatsoever in the United States a factual reporting or unbiased opinion. Is there such a thing? I guess not. Unbiased reporting of what's going on there. It's just not going to happen. When they talk about the Russian invasion, what they obviously are leaving out is the Georgian action that initiated this to the same degree. I mean, look, the Republic of Texas, as far as the Mexicans are concerned, is still part of their territory that broke away and declared itself to be the Republic of Texas. How hard is that? Okay. So the Americans say, no, not Republic of Texas, part of the United States. So we invade the Republic of Texas and wipe out whatever resistance might be there, because a lot of Mexicans live in the Republic of Texas. A lot of Russians live in Ossetia. So we invade and wipe out, and the Mexican government responds by reciprocal invasion. Only they don't stop with the Republic of Texas. They keep going until they hit Oklahoma City and maybe New Orleans. I know. I'm as tired of it as you are. Back to your phone calls. Jack is calling from North Hollywood, California, listening to KTLK. Hey, Jack.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right.
Well, I've been reading all the papers from around the world, along with listening to our neo spew that we're getting from our good people here. And my take on this is that I don't think the Russians are making any kind of a deal with the crime family. I think it was just a sneaky, surprise, slimy attack. They came out and killed a bunch of civilians.
Who did?
I watched the Georgians.
The Georgians, right. Okay.
The Georgians went in at night, knocked off a peacekeeping force that was just kind of, you know, that hadn't had anything going on.
Right.
Blew up a couple police stations and killed the police, were killing civilians in the street. And this is right next door to Russia, you know, and I'm not a big fan of Putin, but this was caused by a sneaky guy trying to pull something. And it was almost as if these same guys are the guys that are used to going out and wiping out a bunch of Palestinians that just throw rocks at them. And then maybe they have Syria or Lebanon next to them who doesn't have airplanes. And what they're finding out is this is not going to fly up there.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that, and I don't believe that, I think that if they try to pull anything on Iraq, it's going to be the same thing, because that's pretty close to Russia, and I heard that Russian scientists are working with Ahmadinejad on this nuclear thing.
Oh, you mean, you mean Iran?
I mean with Iran.
Right,
yeah, they're
right.
Working on it as,
sure.
as a peaceful means not to build nuclear weapons. If Russia wanted Iran to have nuclear weapons, they could just roll them right down there and give them 500.
That's true.
I mean, they seriously could. There's Russian scientists that are working in the nuclear places checking to make sure that these guys aren't doing anything wrong. And I think that what they're trying to say is if you think that you're going to pull the same crap that you've been pulling on everybody else and bullying all these countries that don't even have an air force, on places and kill Russians, then you're going to have to deal with us and then see how tough you are. And I really hope that's what's going on.
Well, I think you're probably right, Jack. And, of course, that would cause Cheney and the rest of these thugs to just wet their pants and run stiff-legged to the nearest bathroom to try to change. Because most of the people involved in our government, and thanks, Jack, most of the people involved in our government that are setting our foreign policy are, first of all, liars. First and foremost, they are liars. But secondly, and close to first, they are cowards. Cowards to the last man and woman. Absolute cowards. And then third, since they are very aggressive and very cowardly and are liars, you add that up on the world stage and you come up with the word terrorist. And that's what so many members of the cutting edge, no pun intended, of the U.S. government is. Are terrorists. Len is calling from New York City, listening on the internet. Len, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. I appreciate your in-depth examination, because I just can't take anymore. I just feel like every time I try to absorb some new horrendous aspect of the world stage these days, I'm now in overload. And, you know, the first thing I said this as I was reading some of this news this evening was, oh, my God, it's August, you know. It's the same month as the August 6th PDB memo, and it's the same month as Katrina, and it's it's the perfect month for calamities in this world since Bush came into office. So,
what is it about August and these people?
I don't know. It's this belief that, you know, you can go on vacation simply because you click your heels together, and the world is going to wait for you to come back after getting, you know, a nice rest. Of course, Bush is constantly on vacation, but I don't know. I appreciate it. I just wanted to call to say I appreciate it, because I just couldn't wrap my head around this stuff.
Well, I can't either, and the only reason, frankly, that I felt like paying any attention to this at all is that this is not like picking on a country that is going to just sit back and say, well, okay, these are Russians, and Putin inherited, and he wanted it, a broken country, the end of empire that was very painful, that was invaded by so-called shock capitalist experts when communism went down. And, of course, it didn't benefit the common people. It set up a whole class of oligarchs that, well, you know the story. And I think Putin is had enough. I make no brief for Putin. I don't like any of these totalitarian bastards, especially one like him who sets Medvedev up as being, well, he's the president. And now I'm the prime minister, but I'm the one calling the shots. Isn't it interesting that the number two man in Russia and the number two man in the United States are calling the shots in both countries? I found that kind of interesting. But go ahead.
That's a good point. No, that's a very good point. I guess, I was just thinking years ago before it became apparent that Putin was really a dictator. There's no other word for it.
Right.
It would have been nice to bring Russia into NATO as well, you know. I mean, just make everybody happy that they're part of the same good old boys club.
Right.
You know, and then you don't have to worry about your fellow NATO ally attacking you. But, when the main goal in life is to produce more arms, you don't want to create too much peace. It really gets in the way.
That's very true. Thanks, Len. And we have a super NATO right now. It's called the United Nations. I've been told here that the pronunciation of the key city in South Ossetia is Tiskin Valley. Okay, I'll try to remember that. Paul Joseph Watson also has written some stuff about this. About this invasion, the truth behind who is primarily responsible for the bloodshed, he writes, unfolding in South Ossetia and surrounding areas have been buried by the Western corporate media. Georgian forces, with the green light from NATO and the support of American Ukrainian mercenaries, launched the attack, targeting civilians and Russian peacekeepers, timed to coincide with the opening of the Beijing Olympics, and so on and so on. Yeah, after 3 days of getting as much info as I can about this, that's where I'm coming down to. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malone.
In the morning, the terrorists or Democrats strike without warning. So to your back seat in bed, wear a bucket on your head. That's what I said. And to show your support for right-wing ideology, the raids on Iraq and the rape of the ecology, while the treasury's being bled. Keep a bucket.
It's about 10 before the hour. Anyway, Paul Joseph Watson, writing at Prison Planet today, says that Georgia was responsible for the first propagation, which amounted to a war crime that launched the conflict. He also says that's not to hide from the fact that Russia's unrelenting response continues to slaughter untold numbers of innocent people. Watson says the initial Georgian bombardment of the provincial capital, Tiskin Valley, was primarily directed to achieve maximum civilian casualties, with residential areas, hospitals, and the university being targeted. That's what the Georgians did. Leading to at least 1,500 civilian deaths, according to both Western and Russian sources. The Associated Press reported, quote, the air and artillery bombardment left the provincial capital without food, water, electricity, and gas. Horrified civilians crawled out of basements into the streets as fighting eased, looking for supplies, end quote. Reports of the initial carnage meted out by Georgian forces and the slaughter of Russian peacekeepers are difficult to find, those reports, because they've already been buried under the deluge of condemnation about Russia's response. An American man living in South Ossetia says U.S. and Georgian leaders are responsible for the violence that has killed at least 2,000 people in the region. American citizen and resident of South Ossetia, Joe Mestis, described the war crimes he witnessed being carried out by Georgian forces backed by U.S. support against innocent civilians. Quote, I thought that since U.S. is supporting Georgia, there would be some control over the situation in South Ossetia and that there would be a peaceful solution to the conflict. But what is happening there now, it's not just war, but war crimes. George Bush and Georgian President Mikhail Shashkavili should answer to the crimes that are being committed. The killing of innocent people, running over by tanks of children and women, throwing grenades into cellars where people are hiding. Mestis added, the war is when military fights against military, but the Georgian army is killing innocent civilians. This is genocide, end quote. And Watson writes, a prime example of media bias in shielding the Republic of Georgia from responsibility for the carnage is the fact that news outlets like the BBC continue to report that, yes, 1,500 civilians have been killed in Georgia, with the obvious inference being that these are victims of the Russian onslaught. But these victims were killed in Georgia. Were not killed, I should say, in Georgia. They were killed in Ossetia by Georgian forces. So, you know, once again, and this is what is infuriating to me. I guess it's infuriating to you, too. That once again, the American public is being fed a huge steaming plate of lies. Absolute lies. Do you remember the stories of the Iraqis who dashed into under Saddam Hussein back in 1990, 1991, before Senior Bush's invasion? The Iraqis who dashed into Kuwaiti hospitals and unplugged incubators and tossed newborn babies on the floors of hospitals. Remember those stories? Remember? All over the media. And then later it turned out that that story was put together by public relations agency in Washington, D.C. And the whistle was blown by a member of the Kuwaiti royal family, the Al-Sabah family, I believe. A woman who said, no, that didn't happen. None of that happened. And then it turned out that the whole thing was put together by this filthy PR firm that operates in Washington. I'm sure they're still there. It's a firm that the governments of George Herbert Walker Bush, and I think Bill Clinton used him, and of course this pig in the White House now, they turn to this agency that is nothing more than a propaganda arm so powerful that would make Goebbels spin in his grave. But you remember those stories, right? The little preemies, the Kuwaiti preemies who were thrown on the street and bayoneted probably by Iraqis. So all of it was a lie. So and the purpose of those stories, of course, was to gin up public support for Pappy Bush's invasion of Iraq, an invasion that he set up by ordering April Glaspie to tell Saddam, when Saddam says, look, the Kuwaitis are stealing our oil, and April Glaspie, the U.S. ambassador to Iraq, the response was, well, you know, our administration really doesn't have any interest in what happens between a couple of Muslim nations. Hence the attack, hence the door wide open for Herbert Walker Bush to launch his invasion, and on and on and on. Now, I realize that the first casualty of war is the truth, but that's kind of an overly cute cliche. That may have been true back in the 30s and 40s, but it doesn't apply any longer because everything that is reported by American media is a lie. If it serves the interest of the Bush crime family. Everything. Every single report, especially on television, which is where, sadly, a vast majority of Americans get the vast majority of their news. And it's all lies. It's there's not even an effort made to say, you know, to quote the liar, to say, well, reports are, and then to offer a corresponding rebuttal. You know, that's not done anymore because there's no need to, because nobody in here in the United States is going to challenge. Who's going to challenge CBS? Look what happened to Dan Rather. Who's going to challenge ABC? Who's going to challenge CNN? And if they are challenged, what will the response be? Kind of like flicking a piece of lint off your best dark sports coat, right? All right, your phone calls when we come back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program on Nova M Radio. Oh, and by the way, was it just 3 years ago? Or, 3 years ago? It seems like it, doesn't it? 3 days ago or 4 days ago where a forged letter that purported to link Saddam Hussein to the September 11, 2001 attacks ordered on White House stationery that came from the office of Vice President Dick Cheney. Well, remember Ron Suskind's book that came out, The Way of the World? And there was a flurry of conversation. Suskind has posted a transcript of a conversation with the CIA's former deputy chief of clandestine operations, one Robert Richer, or Riker. Let's call it Richer because that's how it's spelled. This transcript was posted Friday, the same day the news of the Georgian invasion of Ossetia hit the airwaves. The transcript was posted Friday by author Ron Suskind of an interview conducted in June. Suskind says he put it up because of the denials by both the White House and Richer of a claim Suskind made in his new book. Last Tuesday, the Bush crime family released a statement on Mr. Richard's behalf. In it, Richard declared, quote, "I never received directions from George Tenet or anyone else in my chain of command to fabricate a document as outlined in Mr. Suskind's book." The denial, however, directly contradicts Richard's own comments in the transcript. Now, this is what Suskind posted at his website, quote, "Now, this is from the vice president's office, is how you remembered it, not from the president," Suskind asked. "No, no, no," Richard replied, according to the transcript. "What I remember is George Tenet saying, we got this from, basically, from what George said, Tenet said was downtown." "Which is the White House?" Suskind asked. "Yes," Richard said, "but he did not, in my memory, never said president, vice president, or NSC, okay? But now, he may have hinted, just by the way he said it, it would, because almost all that stuff came from one place only, Scooter Libby, and the shop around the vice president. But he didn't say that specifically," Richard added. I would probably stand on my reputation and say it came from the vice president." Suskind continues, "But there wasn't anything in the writing that you remember saying the vice president?" "No," Richard said. "It just had the White House stationery," Suskind continued. "Exactly right," Richard answered. And later, Richard added, quote, "You know, if you've ever seen the vice president's stationery, it's on the White House letterhead. It may have OVP, Office of the Vice President. I don't remember that, so I don't want to mislead you." Suskind posted the transcript at his blog saying, quote, "This posting is contrary to my practice across 25 years as a journalist, but the issues in this matter are simply too important to stand as discredited in any way," end quote. And it goes on. I'll post some of this at my website when the program's over tonight. But remember, this is just last week. And we were commenting, I think we were commenting, on how very few, at first I said zero news outlets had posted or reported any of this. And then a couple listeners emailed in and said, no, it was here and it was over there. And, you know, Suskind being interviewed. As a result of those emails, though, I still was left with the unnerving fact that what Suskind said was not being reported as news, but was being reported in the context of an interview with an author. Now, that kind of lessens the whammo effect. What would happen if Charlie Gibson let off a newscast by saying, evidence seems to indicate that Vice President Dick Cheney was involved in forcing the CIA to write a phony memo linking, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That would have a little more power, would it not, as a lead story, than maybe in the C block of news stories? That means right before the end of the program, before they get to the kicker, Charlie Gibson says on ABC's Good Morning America this morning, author Ron Suskin leveled a charge against the White House that Vice President Dick Cheney was instrumental in writing a phony memo about Saddam Hussein and 9/11. I mean, it's gone. It's just not, you know, yawn, crickets, you know, who cares? But the story is completely gone now. It's down the memory hole. Winston Smith was brought into the Ministry of Truth over the weekend and told very clearly, get rid of this. How about we have Georgia invade South Ossetia? Would that work? That will work. Okay. But that story's gone, isn't it? That story's gone. Must not have been very important. Fraud. And this gives you a clear understanding, doesn't it? It certainly does me, of why Bush and Cheney refused to be sworn under oath when they testified, quote, quote, before the, quote, quote, 9/11 commission. Because everything they said was a filthy lie. Every single thing. And the possibility that they would have been questioned about this. You see, therefore, there's no perjury. The only time someone says, well, I'll answer your questions, but not under oath. What does that mean? Come on, put your brain in gear. What does that mean? That means something, that very simply, could only mean one thing. Because I don't want to be charged with perjury later on, because I'm going to sit here and goddamn lie to you. So I'll give you testimony, I'll tell you anything you want to hear, but not under oath. And then, of course, the Blue Ribbon Commission investigating 9/11 acquiesced, didn't they? Oh, well, okay, we won't put you under oath, since that's not what you want. See, at that point, had that commission really been involved in seeking the truth about 9/11, they would have folded their books, dumped them in the nearest dumpster, and walked out and said, screw this. This is insane. I'm not going to be a party to this. I cannot believe some of the people on that commission, who I thought were honorable, who allowed Bush and Cheney to sit there and lie to them. So anyway, I digress, don't I? The story of the day is... Well, Michael Phelps won a third gold medal. That's and I'm interested in that because I love to see the swimmers. I love to see, that's the only event at the Olympics that really intrigues me, gets my attention. I love to see the American swimmers win. But the story of the day, of course, and yesterday and over the weekend, is not Cheney committing another act of treason against the United States, another impeachable act, but is the invasion of the Georgian military into an autonomous region or however, breakaway province, whatever you want to call it, kind of like Kosovo, right? Wasn't Kosovo a breakaway province? It's now an independent state. But there is South Ossetia, and the Georgian military, with the help of all sorts of mercenaries, weaponry provided or sold to them by the Israelis and the Americans, training by the Americans and, according to Israeli sources, Israeli military. The Georgians invade, and the slaughter and the destruction of villages is pretty intense, kind of like a blitzkrieg. And then all of a sudden, the story about Cheney's gone, and we're talking about Russia and Georgia. It's amazing.
Putin that Russia is a part of Europe.
Really?
Who made me judge and jury hear it?
Russia is a part of Europe. 21 past the hour. Back to your phone calls here. Terry is calling from Las Cruces, New Mexico, listening on the internet. Hey, Terry.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, my head is spinning.
Yeah, me too.
How much can we take? Listen, I have a few thoughts. Now, whether Shaskevili is a dupe or he's complicit, my feeling is he may as well have been a graduate of the School of Americas here. I mean, he did go to school here on a State Department fellowship. He was at Columbia Law School. He was at George Washington University. He's got an honorary doctorate from the University of Haifa in Israel for attending a Georgia-Israel Friendship Week in 2004. You couldn't make it up. And even at the time, when you talk about the memory hole, even at the time he came into power in 2003, all the papers around the world were writing it as an American coup. I mean, the thing about
that's
these
right.
guys is they don't hide anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I tend to disagree with you that Putin would give them cover for a Cheney story, because, you know, I listened to C-SPAN the other day, and this guy calls in from the South, and he says, listen, if Jesus Christ himself came down here and said, these people are lying. These Republicans would look him straight in the eye and say, you're wrong.
Right.
What else do you need to convince? There's so much evidence. There are so. Why do we even need any more memos? Why do we need any more fake letters? I mean, it's crazy.
I understand, though, Terry, that I'm not serious about Putin providing cover for an American invasion of Iran. I tossed that out. I think somebody sent me an email. I had that idea, and I think the point I was trying to make was that there is nothing. I mean, I agree with you. There is nothing beyond the pale for these people. Nothing.
Nothing.
Absolutely nothing. If they can make a deal with Putin in order to fulfill their plans for Iran, they'll do it. The fly in the ointment is Putin. He's not going to agree. You know, I think Putin literally hates the United States. I think he does.
Absolutely. I think here's the scenario I see with this. You have 9/11 happening here. Whether you believe any official stories or not, and I agree with you about our media, you don't get the truth from any of them.
No.
But now you have 9/11 happening. So instead of treating it like a crime committed by certain people,
mm-hmm.
they treat it as an act of war, and they go to war in Afghanistan. This happens at the same time that all of these oil companies are circling the Caspian Sea and trying to figure out how to get their pipelines through.
Right.
Now, George Bush's father is now working at Carlyle as the head of Asian Development, and there's paperwork on putting a pipeline from the Caspian Sea through Georgia all the way to China, perhaps to Japan. Now, they can't get their paperwork together. Then you get this guy going to school here. He comes in. There's a Rose Revolution in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
He wins by the same numbers as Saddam Hussein, 96%, right? Freely elected, sure. So he's in there, and what does he do? He gives us the third largest number of troops to go to Iraq, and nobody even mentions it. I never heard that before.
No, I wasn't aware of that either.
Right. So there he is with his 2,000 people supporting Bush, and the guy's whole biography is about human rights. I mean, it's the perfect.
Mm-hmm.
It's just okay. So now we've gone to and we're in Afghanistan. Now, what's Russia doing? Russia has all these deals trying to get into this pipeline and pushing. And who's doing the numbers on the pipeline? Enron. So, I mean, the layers and layers and layers of things going on. But now you have Ronald McDonald Reagan saying, you know, tear down this wall as if a culture is going to change overnight, as if there aren't going to be people like some people we still have here in the South over the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's just human nature. I don't think Putin has has one whit of thought for us at all, except that now here we go into Iraq. So we've got Iraq's oil. We're in Afghanistan, and you know the only thing we're protecting there is the Caspian Sea for the pipeline, because
right.
the whole country's just growing, you know, opium, and you know, mm-hmm. everybody else is running around doing their thing. And now we've got access to the Caspian Sea total, and we're threatening Iran. So now what's Russia going to do? The whole world is not on our side anymore. We're standing alone. Even most of this country, 81% of them, said that we're in the wrong direction, which means we're not supporting this idiot in the White House. What is a better time for Russia to make a move?
Terry.
And now, and if you figure, if Russia can ally itself with Iran, with an army of over a million on the ground,
mm-hmm.
and with China, who already owns us but maybe wants to take possession sooner or later, who's going to fight with us?
I hear you. Terry, you've just sent icy fingers up and down my spine, and you did it in a very articulate way. Thanks, Terry. I got to leave it there. Thanks, Terry. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. It's 26 before the hour. Kawasaki says, Mike, please tell your listener to go to YouTube and type in Russia and Georgia and see how the media is covering that story. There's some information there that is unbelievable. Okay. Will do. Another good source, if you want to be really gutsy, is to go to Russian news sources, go to Turkish news sources. European news sources. Back to your phone call. Steve is calling from Wisconsin, listening on the internet. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. This is a fascinating coverage you're doing here. I'm glued to the internet. and thank you very much for doing it.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, I just put the little pieces of information together from an awful lot of sources, you know.
I mean, that's what journalists are supposed to do. I don't know. You have to do their job, I guess, in this country. But anyway, I think Putin and our guy, what's his name? George W. Bush. I think they're at pretty good terms, as you noted. You know, they meet in Beijing, I guess, and they will cross paths several times. I think they're just fine. Putipu and George Bush, everything is going beyond according to schedule. The Cold War is on. The oil prices will go up. I mean, right now they just shut down two ports in Georgia, right? And those are crucial for BP oil for Europe. I mean, that will spike the oil prices, I guess. Maybe not. I don't know. But it's just business as usual. We need the Cold War apparatus. There's a reason for them to exist, mm-hmm. you know. And then you'll hear the back and forth now. You know, the Russians are going to send and sell high-tech weaponry to Syria and Iran. I mean, what are we going to do about that? So, I mean, this is the old, you know, the old Cold War guard. I mean, that's Putin is the grandson of a cook for Joe Stalin. George Bush is the grandson of one of the perpetrators of the World War II war machine. I mean, one of the financiers of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, these guys have a family tie. I mean, go back generations perpetuating the military-industrial complex on both sides. So I think they're happy.
Do you, let me ask you something, Steve, out of left field. Do you think the election of Barack Obama in this country will change some of this?
No, not. I'm very skeptical about changing anything in a radical democratic fashion. I think what will happen, though, the grown-ups will get in charge again, because right now I think the carrier is steaming towards the Gulf War, the Russian fleet, the Black Sea fleet steaming towards Georgia.
Right.
I think this is we are sitting on a trigger here, and on a box of dynamite that can blow up any time with these two idiots in charge. And I think we need some grown-ups in office. And if you think that McCain, 4 years, we can afford 4 years of McCain, I mean, think about this. According to most scientists, we don't have a decade for global warming. Mm-hmm. I mean, why do you think McCain would want to stay in Iraq forever? Because of the oil. I mean, if he really was serious about what he's talking about greening the economy or whatever and getting off of oil, he wouldn't care about Iraq. The reason why he does is because, he's a puppet of the oil companies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Barack Obama is different. And I really think that some of the guys that you referred to, like Zbigniew Brzezinski behind him, he's seen the light. I do think that there is an old guard in
Brzezinski has seen the light?
Yeah, I do think so. I think some of those old cold warriors have second thoughts. You know, and that's all I count on. You know, I don't have, just as I told you before, I didn't have any illusions about, let's say, guys like Shevardnadze.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the current guy, Saakashvili, deposed Shevardnadze, but they were colleagues together, right?
Right.
But Shevardnadze deposed the previous guy.
Right.
Who was a very famous intellectual, Gamshakurdian, Zviad Gamshakurdian, son of the greatest Georgian writer ever. And he was this great freedom fighter. I mean, Kucinich and Ralph Nader have nothing on this guy. This guy went through prisons. He was organizing in 1956, organizing protests against the Soviet Union. Can you believe this? In the heart of the Soviet Union.
That's pretty astonishing. Hey, listen, Steve, this is very, very interesting, and you're a very bright man. I appreciate this. I need to leave it there and move on. Thanks, Steve. I hate to cut Steve off. I hate to cut Terry off. I hate to cut anybody off who is as well-informed and as articulate as some of you are. I never fails to amaze me how you understand these issues. So many of the people that listen to this program, not that there's that much of a connection, I'm just saying, so many people that listen to this program are so well-versed in these issues, on these issues, no matter what the issue is. You're aware of the historical, the cultural, the political context of some of these horrifying things that just seem to come like so many ping pong balls out of a lawn blower or something, just pew, 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 one after another. These Bush generated crises. Anyway, thanks, Steve. I appreciate you checking in. Kevin is calling from Hartford, Connecticut, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
All right. I think Rendon Associates, I believe, are the people that you're thinking of before, right?
Say it again.
The Rendon Associates. They're the
Oh, that was the PR firm. Yeah.
Right.
Rendon. Yeah.
Right. I just wanted to, I knew you were getting stuck there, but John Rendon, yeah. I was calling up about, that lady that called, her name was Terry. She pretty much said a lot of what I was going to say about mm-hmm. the oil. I'll add a few things along those lines, because you asked the other guy just now about Zbigniew Brzezinski. And I think Brzezinski, I believe that he cares more about that area than he does the Middle East. And see, the neocons care more about the quote war on Islam than they do about what Brzezinski thinks should be the primary focus. So, you're getting back to your question about Brzezinski and Obama, I think Brzezinski would say, yeah, we need to focus less on those small Middle Eastern countries and keep abreast of what's going on, in the
But to what end? Brzezinski was the classic neoliberal cold warrior who,
right?
You know, he was Carter's what, Secretary of State?
No, National Security Advisor.
National Security Advisor. Brzezinski was one of the architects of the response, the U.S. response to the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan.
Right.
And look how well that went. It produced the Mujahideen and eventually, ultimately, Osama bin Laden. Not that he would not have been produced some other way, but...
Oh, he still defends that position, by the way. I don't doubt what you just said at all, Mike. I'm just saying that, you know, if you were to ask me what, you know, about Zbigniew Brzezinski, what he would look at as being more important, I think.
Well, you're probably right. You're probably right, Kevin. The old, I hate this word, the old paradigm, the old model, is no longer in effect. We don't get into. For the most part, we don't get into proxy wars. The wars that we'll get into now are about energy resources, and they're also about economic spheres of influence, but they're certainly not about the political points of view, because
no.
the only country left, the only two countries left, I think, and not even Cuba anymore, about the only one left that is Stalinist is North Korea.
Right. I wanted to ask you, are you aware, just getting back to Terry's point, and you said, oh, my God, I think you said something like that when she said this, but are you aware that in 2005, I think you probably remember this, but I want to say it, that that Russia and China had, for the first time in I don't know how many years, maybe ever, the Washington Post reported, and I kept the article, that they had joint military exercises.
I think I do remember that. I didn't realize it was 4 years ago, or 3 years ago. It seems to me it was more recent. But
no, it could have been. You know, they could have had some more in 2007, but no, they had in 2000. I saw the article 2005. Mm-hmm. I can email you the article if you want.
I'd love to. Yeah, send me the link because that is that also is old Cold War kind of saber rattling.
Let me just say one last thing, Mike, if you will.
Sure.
One of the big knocks about the Bush administration and Cheney and all of them was that when they came back to power, you know, the world was shifting into an integrated economic, you know, whether you,
right.
You know, whether you want to.
All right, got about 30 seconds here, Kevin.
But that the knock was that they were bringing Cold War mentality back to the White House. And I guess
we've seen exactly how that works. Thanks, Kevin. I appreciate it, man. Appreciate it. There's another caller. I just hate when I have to, when the clock is running. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Why are we all fighting? Oh, why do we keep on lighting these fires, these bombs? We don't know what's gone wrong. We're getting where we've come from, and all of this.
Ten before the hour, thanks to the usual crew. You know who they are, most notably our production staff tonight, Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Burge, Catherine Bay. It is 10 before the hour. I guess I just said this. Back to your phone calls. Joe is calling from Brookings, Oregon. Joe, welcome to the program.
Yeah, I just heard the news just a couple minutes ago that Cindy Sheehan qualified to get on the ballot against Queen Pelosi. She'll be running as an independent.
Yeah, I heard that earlier today, I think, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's good news in this day of the war drums and... who the hell are these politicians, Obama included, think they are to be, who the hell they think they are to be telling Russia what they can and what they can't be doing in their own backyard? Did you hear the same thing that what Condoleezza Rice was over there in Russia or Georgia, whatever, just a couple of days before this whole thing escalated there in Russia?
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, boom! you know, could this be the August surprise instead of the October surprise?
I don't know any longer, Joe. I have a hard time trying to decide who's trying to surprise whom. If Condoleezza Rice was there, I missed that story, but if she was there, then I'm sure that the word went out from the shoe lady that time for a little action in that part of the world. Joe, thanks. I can't even speculate anymore. Robert is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Robert, welcome to the program.
Yes, Mike. Hey, for Condoleezza, one free trip around the world is like any other, you know? She probably, I don't even know. She's been gone on a lot of trips.
That's true.
But what I wanted to say is I caught something today that nobody's caught, so here's like a little exclusive for you, that McCain today said that these Russian actions have no place in 21st century Europe, and Georgia's not in Europe. It's in Asia. And
I think it was Bush that made the statement, and I think we had the soundbite earlier this evening. But
Bush may have said it also, but McCain put out a statement. I think it was probably written by the little neocon gang because it has that.
Yeah.
I sent you a longer email about this if you want to read it, but it has that William Crystal type feel to it if you ever read his New York Times editorials. He said Russian actions in violation of international law have no place within 21st century Europe. And McCain said that, and the border, I mean, it's an imaginary border because there's no ocean, but the border that's been there for hundreds of years in Europe and Asia that the geographers have established is pretty much along the border between Georgia and Russia. So Georgia's 90% in Asia, and 97% of the population of Georgia is in Asia. And this little South Ossetia region is just slightly larger than Rhode Island. And it's in 90% in Asia also. And we would get into a tussle with Russia over this.
It's all astonishing. As far as the geographic location, I'm sure McCain, who is a moron, who has absolutely no sense of history, whether it's geographic history, cultural history, it doesn't register, like you point out, just repeating whatever the neocon line of the day is as far as Georgia. I think the point they're trying to make is that the Bush crime family has tried desperately to convert Georgia into being a part of Europe to a membership in the North Atlantic Treaty Organization in order to intimidate Putin, in order to continue with the building of these radar missile defense sites that Putin has made very clear. Any country that was formerly part of that sphere of influence of the Soviet Union, whether they were part of the Warsaw Pact or not, any country that places these radar installations within their borders will feel a ripping across his backside from a paw of the Russian bear, and that will probably come in the form of either, I don't think, just an outright invasion. And the Georgians precipitated, in my opinion, what occurred today or over the weekend. I think the way the Russians will retaliate is to make sure that the countries involved have a very, 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 very cold winter and a very, 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 very hot summer next year. The Russians have very quietly been establishing themselves, not so quietly if you're paying attention, but we don't pay attention, but they've been establishing themselves as one of the major suppliers of energy, whether it's natural gas or oil, to Europe. And the Europeans who are sitting there tonight or the weekend scratching their heads like, oh, Jesus, how do we respond to this? Well, since it's more or less in that neighborhood, I think the Europeans have a clearer understanding. They have mixed media. A lot of their media just lying bastards like we have here. But ours is entirely lying bastards. I'm talking about television. Entirely lying. Entirely at the beck and call of the Bush crime family or the U.S. government, which in turn is owned by corporate America. So the people in Europe who have a more thorough understanding and the Caucasus region and the Middle East have a more thorough understanding of what these conflicts mean in this part of the world, it's like, Jesus, God, this is not happening. We, on the other hand, rely on phonies and warmongers like Condoleezza Rice or James Baker or Cheney or Wolfowitz or whoever to set foreign policy. And it's killing us. It's absolutely killing us. I and the planet. I hope that we can hold on until we can have a change of government here. And I wish that change of government, at this point, I've made myself pretty clear about this, at this point, I wish that change of government would be neither Democrat or Republican at this point. Yeah. All right. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Thanks for hanging out tonight. I do appreciate it. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.